This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
I want to win badly. I want to win more Lombardis for Philadelphia and our fans. We got the greatest fans around, and I will do everything possible. And if it means making any change necessary, I will.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem, music producers talking Philly sports. And oh boy, if you haven't heard the news around the city, around the country, around the NFL world, Doug Peterson is out.
Every time a chapter closes, a new one begins.
I mean, this is, it's stunning. And the thing to me is, it's not stunning because of the way Doug coached. No, he coached his way into being fired.
He did.
But the emphasis of what was wrong with this team didn't really fall on the head coach to me.
No, it's personnel. And obviously we know, we've talked about it. Everybody in Philadelphia has kind of beat it to the ground. Everybody in the national media has beat it to the ground.
And they're continuing to beat it.
And they should, because it was earned by Howie Roseman. When you miss on Pro Bowl transcendent players and back-to-back drafts, there is just no more glaring of an obvious miscue for the squad.
And I mean, to add insult to injury, Jeffrey Lurie's press conference after the announcement is made yesterday was just, it was a laughable 40 minutes of him trying to give us some kind of rational explanation. And
he was just searching. He's just searching.
Really searching, and refused to put onus or any accountability on Howie Roseman and his draft selecting. He was asked multiple times, multiple ways by the reporters on the Zoom meeting.
They were getting creative.
They were getting creative to fish out this answer, and he just kept giving you blather and nonsense.
And what does that tell you? That tells you that Howie ain't going nowhere.
No, going nowhere.
He might even get a bigger office now.
as if the corner one isn't big enough for this guy.
Yeah, man. Anyway, though.
I don't know what to make of it.
I don't either. I was just going to say real quick, because I didn't, when you first talked about Doug, you know, as a Philadelphia Eagle fan, I think I echo the sentiments of the majority of Eagles fans, if not all of them. This guy came in and won a Super Bowl after losing his quarterback and a significant amount of his players, and then he went on to beat the best quarterback-coach combination in the history of the NFL. So thank you, Doug, for that. We definitely will look back on those years and smile, even though the years after the Super Bowl were just an average football team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've been tearing whatever is left of my hair out for the last 2 years with his play calling. There's just no doubt about that.
Decision-making as well. It's very poor.
But I absolutely respect him as a man, and I appreciate what he did for the city, for the team, and for this fan base who was just starving for a Super Bowl championship. We've never had one in this city, and, you know, he helped give us that.
He did. And if he didn't get that, he would have been gone probably last year.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not, because they did make... Here's the thing we're missing, and I think this is important to note, too. This guy came in with a rookie quarterback in 2016. Obviously, you're not going to make the playoffs with a rookie quarterback. Usually, still went 7-9, still finished winning the last two games. And then you go to the playoffs three straight years with the chip, and in the back-to-back opportunity, they should have won, but they the drop from Alshon Jeffrey when they would have went back to the NFC title game. I mean, this guy came in and did what a lot of coaches are not able to do, and he was the victim of multiple factors that led to his dismissal, as well as his own hand in it. That's why when Jeffrey said, well, he didn't, quote, deserve to be fired, but it's just a decision for the betterment of the organization or something to that effect.
Right, because I know the word fired is being applied here, but I actually think this was a mutual separation, and I'll tell you why. I think that Doug said, listen, these are my coaches. This is the staff I want to have on board, and we can fix Carson. We can turn this right around for next year. And Jeffrey, as he said on the Zoom meeting, where he basically said 3, 4, 5 years, he's thinking macro. Doug's thinking micro.
Yes.
And that's where they disagree. Jeffrey's like, I don't want to turn this around next year. I think that we need to go young guys, be bad for a year, and turn it around the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years get back to where we need to be. And Doug is trying to fix it right now and save his job.
Right, because he had the new norm comment.
Which he'll never live down.
He'll never live down. And, I mean, I understand at that moment, at that podium, you have – You have the art museum just full of Philadelphians of all races, all colors, just commingling and being happy with each other. It's amazing to look at how quick the world changes. That's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
But what I'm getting at is, you're right. Jeffrey wants to reboot this thing, almost like pressing reset on your Nintendo when you lose in Tecmo Bowl.
Which is sometimes what you have to do.
What you have to
do. The game freezes.
That's it. That's a perfect analogy for this Philadelphia Eagles franchise right now.
It's just disturbing the way he absolved Howie Roseman of his responsibilities as a GM to pick good players in the draft, to sign good free agents. He just was absolved. I don't even think, does he realize waking up today, turning on Angelo or any of the Philly radio sports talk guys, does he realize that Howie Roseman is public enemy number one in this city right now?
Probably not. And here's another reason why he's protecting him. Because Jeffrey Lurie is paying the guys that Howie picked.
Right.
So he has a...
And he also probably had a hand in selecting these guys and signing these guys.
We'll never know, I guess, with the draft room, war room that they have, like who is really, truly... And every draft, I'm sure, has been kind of different in that regard, you know, in terms of you have 10 guys at a round table or you got Howie and two guys at a round table. Like, how are they doing this? Because, you know, we've only seen, like, movies, like, I think Kevin Costner did that one movie about the draft. I don't know if you ever saw it. But in that movie, they portrayed, like, draft day.
And it was draft day. It was tremendous,
phenomenal movie.
Yeah,
but for example, I know it's Hollywood, but the example is they had like 15 guys around a table.
Right.
If that's the case, you can't just blame Howie.
Right.
But we don't know.
And Kevin Costner was pissing off every single one of those guys.
Weren't
at that
they?
Round
yeah,
table.
They were the Browns. I think it was the Browns.
It was
or something.
The Browns. Yeah.
Well, how about the Browns? We'll get into that.
We'll get into the Browns.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a good weekend of football, that I'll say.
Oh, man, remarkable. Super Wild Card weekend. I hope they stick with the format.
Yeah, and we'll discuss it on the road trip that we take a little later on, but I'm still just stuck on the future of this Eagles team. I mean, obviously now we know Doug is out, Howie stays.
And Carson probably stays too.
The report that came out literally minutes after Doug's dismissal was that now Carson is liable to want to stay.
Right, because I also saw a report, I think it was, I don't know if it was John Clark, I forget who, but I was scrolling on my Twitter and it said that Carson said Doug has to go almost, suggested that he would not want to play for Doug again.
I think this was obviously a owner decision, but, you know, I gotta think that the players weighed in on this because Miles Sanders made some comments on the radio that Jason Kelce had to clean up. Kelce's the guy who does always have Doug's back.
They call that in the governmental intelligence field, they call that sanitizing comments and sanitizing documents.
Right. Okay,
Kelce was the sanitizer.
Yeah, he came in and cleaned up the comments, but, you know, it wasn't lost on anybody that you know, Miles felt some type of way. Jalen Hurts felt some type of way.
Oh, man. Watching those clips of him on the sideline mouthing, that's not right, and just shaking his head.
And he's thinking, I know, you know, when somebody's in his ear.
You don't want your former Heisman runner-up, All-American, future potential quarterback
right
to be making gestures like that and mouthing that on the sideline in his rookie year.
Right.
I think that might be a large part of it why Jeffrey let him go, too. You can't have Hurts and Wentz upset.
Right.
Then who's going to play quarterback?
Right, because Carson's in there like, it's either me or him.
Basically, and you know, I kind of understand because Carson has every right to feel jilted and frustrated and all the emotions that any other human would feel when the entire world is speaking for you and painting you as some, like, negative baby-like teammate, which is just not the truth.
No, and we know people firsthand that have direct lines of communication with Carson Wentz.
That Alumni Members Association member, Rob Motti.
Rob Motti of the AP, he has a direct line and in some cases has been kind of like the proprietor of information that Carson wants you to hear. So he delivers that to Rob.
Right.
And Rob has said a lot of things, but one One thing he's constantly said that rings true every time I hear it is that Carson is a good guy. He's a team guy. He's a hard worker. His work ethic is through the roof.
He's a family man now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this guy is not like...
He's not a whining baby.
He's not what he's painted as by guys like... I'm trying to think of the guy in the media that... Ryan Clark, for example. Ryan Clark just has this weird thing for painting Carson as like this baby in the locker room.
Well, he's not here.
Right.
So he really...
Right.
He doesn't sit in the seat that Rob sits in, and he's not...
Right.
He's not having that direct line of communication with Carson like Rob is. So when Rob says something to us about what he heard from Carson, I tend to absolutely believe it.
Likewise. And speaking of the Vet Alumni Members Association, we have two really, really good guests on the Vet Line today. We're going to have Matt Mullen, who's a sports writer for the Philly Voice.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really strong opinion.
A lot to talk about.
Articulate guy. Always love his perspectives. And we also have Tyler Zuli, who's an on-air producer for 97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah, Sixers guy, too. So
yeah,
we'll get
man.
To talk a little Sixers.
Excited about that.
Moving ahead to the next Eagles head coach. So there's obviously been a lot of talk, a lot of rumors, a lot of candidates out there, and a lot of fan favorite candidates. I mean, Eric Bieniemy from Kansas City.
I like him.
Even though, yeah, I want Eric Bieniemy.
Chris Berman, Eric sleeping with Bieniemy. Remember
tremendous.
That from the 90s,
Boomer,
dude?
Tremendous.
Oh my God.
I think we end up with Mike Kafka. You know what I mean? That just feels like a Lurie move. Mike Kafka. Now, listen, Mike Kafka is actually good. He's the quarterback's coach at KC, along with Bieniemy.
The Mike Kafka that we drafted.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Maybe we'll bring
like
Nick Foles back. Maybe we'll bring Nick Foles back. We'll have Kafka, Foles, Carson. It's a quarterback factory, bro.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's a quarterback factory.
Yeah, I mean, Kafka, by the way, it's a similar... It would be like another Doug... type story.
It would be identical.
Almost identical.
Now, I don't want a guy like that. I told you off air, I'll tell our listeners, I'm old school traditionalist when it comes to coaches. I want a football, proven football guy like a Bill Cowher to come in and just revamp it. And I know why.
Yes.
I know why that
yes.
might not happen with the whole...
The power structure.
Personnel
here.
Power structure.
Right.
I get it. But that's my thought. I don't want one of these college experiments to be Chip Kelly 2.0. I'm just not into it, man.
So you're not into potentially Lincoln Riley?
No interest.
Really?
I see a
Steve. He was Jalen Hurts' coach.
I don't care. I see a Steve Spurrier or I don't know. I just don't. I want a proven NFL commodity like defensive coordinator Robert Saleh from the 49ers.
Right.
That's a football guy.
They asked the 49ers for permission to interview him.
He looks like a football guy. He coaches like a football guy. His guys on the sideline treat him like a football guy. And he looks like, for a city like Philly, he's like a tough guy. He ain't going to take no crap from nobody. I like a guy like that. I don't know about as the head coach, though.
But here's the thing. We know Jeffrey Lurie's track record of hiring head coaches. When does he hire a defensive-minded head coach?
Buddy Ryan, but he didn't hire Buddy
Ryan.
That was Norman Braman.
Yes.
Hired Buddy Ryan. So Lurie came in with...
Ray Rhodes.
Ray Rhodes was the first coach he hired.
Yeah.
So you got Rhodes.
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, and then we know the rest.
Yeah, Chip which were both under the same
tree.
So he's
only hired four coaches in 25 years.
Right.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I will say that in defense of Jeffrey Lurie, for as much as we might lambaste him for his ridiculous press conference yesterday.
Oh, my God. It was like Andy McPhail 2.0.
It really was, man. In his defense, I mean, to only have four coaches in that many years is pretty impressive. I mean, only maybe the Steelers have done better with like two or three in that stretch.
Right. I mean, wouldn't you love to have Mike Tomlin here?
And I guess the Patriots. Oh, Mike Tomlin, he's an amazing guy, man.
Yeah, and Patriots is obviously Belichick.
So when you have your owner is in the same breath as those franchises, plus in the last 20 years, he did make a very good point. We've been in the NFC title game or better 7 of the last 20 seasons, man.
Well, that's
pretty hard to do. That's just hard to do.
It is hard to do. I know the points he was trying to make, but. Specifically, when he was asked about how it pertains to the drafting and signing, it's like he danced around that and talked about, you know, stuff that happened 15 years ago. It's like we're talking about now, notably the last 4 or 5 years of drafts.
Well, like you said, he's thinking macro, bro. So I think he's thinking macro in a backdated way as well. You know?
He is. I just, you know, I don't know. What do you think the odds of Deuce Staley becoming the head coach?
I saw that report. I don't know. I love Deuce. We all love Deuce. You know, guys in our age range, in your 30s and 40s, that, you know, grew up in the vet and watched all those great runs that Donovan made with that Buckhalter, Staley, Dorsey, Levens backfield. Obviously, we have nostalgia for it, but this isn't the time for nostalgia, man. This is the time to get the right guy in here to fix this football team, take the talent they have, and make it happen.
So there's Brian Daboll. He's Buffalo's offensive coordinator. He's done wonders with Josh Allen, which we've seen. We saw Josh Allen come out good, and then he gradually got better, and this year he's like MVP level.
He's Carson Wentz 2017 2.0, man.
Absolutely.
That's almost a perfect example, except for the fact that Carson did it without the best receiver in football this year, Stephon Diggs.
True.
Statistically speaking. I mean, people might argue DeAndre Hopkins, that's fair. But statistically speaking, Diggs had the most yards in the league. So Josh Allen's doing this with the best receiver in football.
Very true.
Carson did it with Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor, who, in Agholor's defense, that was the best year he's ever going to have on a
career
pro field.
Year, yes.
He's never going to match that again, but
no.
You know my point.
Are you interested in Brian Daboll?
Maybe.
What about Arthur Smith, offensive coordinator from the Tennessee Titans?
I love what they do. Now, here's the thing. The key to what they do is not a coordinator or a coach. The key to what they do is the best running back on the planet.
Right. Yeah, it is.
So, Miles Sanders is great. And we already talked about in the Numbers Don't Lie segments how the remarkable rushes he had. He had more than Derrick Henry.
Yeah, it seems like he's on the list every week.
He is on the list almost every week, but he's not Derrick Henry. So, I don't know if that system is more Arthur Smith, or it's more you have a veteran quarterback managing the game well with A.J. Brown, who's a phenomenal run-after-the-catch guy, and then Derrick Henry just pounding a rock for 2,000 yards, only the eighth player in NFL history to eclipse that. So I'd look at Arthur Smith with a grain of salt.
What about Joe Brady? Here's a guy. He's the offensive coordinator from a team that you like, the Carolina Panthers, and he was a Penn State graduate assistant.
I like that. That's good. Still nostalgic. I'm hard to please, man. I don't know. With this, I don't even really know, man. I'm so conflicted with this because we were kind of thrust into this so unexpectedly. It's almost like a car accident. You know, you don't see coming. You know, you get smacked. Next thing you know, your airbags are going off and you're like, yo, what happened? Am I okay?
Right.
That's how it feels for this franchise right now.
And it's a twofold because there's that point and the fact that, you know, we're a little late to the party. On interviewing head coach candidates.
Yeah, you got the Falcons out there making moves for a month. You got the Jets already making moves. The Jaguars are talking about
moves.
Because
you don't need just a head coach. You need a head coach. You need an OC.
The whole staff
you need
almost.
A DC.
You almost need a whole staff.
Yeah.
This is a whole overhaul, which is precisely why I think now that we're kind of diving into it more, precisely why Jeffrey parted ways with Doug, because he knew that an overhaul was the only way to move with this.
Right. Who do you like as the next head coach? Out of all those candidates, who's your guy?
Out of all the guys you listed, I don't know. I would lean towards Robert Saleh, man.
Really?
I think out of the names,
defensive minded
guy. Out of the names you just listed. Now, I know that I said initially a second ago, probably better as a coordinator, but from the names you just gave me, only because I just love that defensive dominance angle for a football team.
Then you got to go somebody like Caldwell or maybe Kafka as your OC because he's a quarterback's coach now. It would be a step
and
up.
You put a more offensive guy that's going to call the plays offensively, and Saleh would get that defense humming. I want to see a defense like we had on the Andy Reid NFC title runs, which really, without those defenses, McNabb is not held in the same light as he is. Meaning positive. The guys who still think of him positively like we do.
Yeah.
You know, McNabb doesn't go to 5 straight NFC title games without that defense.
Absolutely not.
Trot. Dog, Corey Simon, those guys, man, we fail to realize now how dominant that defense was.
Yeah, we do need another defense like
Lito
that.
Lito Shepard, Sheldon Brown, and they're lockdown corners, man.
I know.
We have nothing close to that now.
I would say
nothing close.
Bieniemy would be my guy, but I just think you reach for Bieniemy and you end up getting Kafka. I mean, that's just how I see the Eagles, you know. But, all right, on the vet line, coming up, Tyler Zuli from 97.5 The Fanatic. It's a good one. We're going to talk some Sixers and, of course, react to the firing of Doug Peterson. Stay tuned. Vet Alumni.
And now, it's the Vet Line.
Why don't you answer your phone?
Today on the Vet Line, we're honored to be joined by Tyler Zuhle, 97.5 The Fanatic on-air producer and Penn State alum. Thanks for joining us, Tyler.
Yeah, of course, guys. This is going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Likewise, and there's a lot to talk about right now.
Oh, boy.
We obviously know what happened with Doug and then our prestigious owner's 40-minute assessment. What are your thoughts?
I thought that it was a strange day as a whole, and I don't necessarily mean the firing of Doug Peterson, because I think that objectively speaking, on the field stuff, probably there was enough cause there to fire Doug Peterson. And I understand that people have the complaint of, well, he took the Eagles to the Super Bowl, you know, only 3 years ago,
right?
Which is true, and that buys you some credibility. But you know, 4-11-1, it was an offense that I think was inefficient at best, and there was a stretch of games. I think between the second Giants game and the Seattle game, and I think that includes Cleveland as well, where I thought Doug Peterson was flat out terrible as a head coach.
So
I think that he probably could and should have been fired. I just felt that it was weird the whole 40 minutes that Jeffrey Lurie seemingly blindly backed Howie Roseman.
Yes.
Who I think is the larger issue here.
So do we. We feel exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
Howie, if you look at the drafts, we know passing on DK, passing on Jefferson, even moving up to maybe grab Dalvin Cook at that point. If you have a few more players on this team probably easily wins the NFC East this year, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, obviously how bad the division was this year. You know, Doug was awful, and I think it's fair to say that we can say all of these things are true at once. It doesn't have to be like a one or you know, A or B or C. It could be A and B and C. And so for me, like, Doug was terrible this year, but there are certain points where you look at it and go, a head coach can only do so much with the personnel that he's given and put around him. And you guys are right. You know, when you miss on draft pick after draft pick after draft pick, yes, the coaching scheme could have been better. Yes, the play calling could have been better. But at the same time, you can only scheme for the players that you have on your roster. You know, we can't play like made up football. Like, you know, it's not Madden where
right.
Like, you know, you just take a guy and put him on your roster and all of a sudden your team is better. So I think that while it is fair to say that Doug probably should have been fired, it's just kind of a weird dynamic in that organization right now.
It really is. Now, speaking to the weird dynamics specifically at our quarterback factory that we have, which of the quarterback factory products do you want to see starting as the Eagles quarterback in 2021, and maybe why?
Well, I think that that's a really tough question to break down, because I think that I would like to know, A, who the head coach is, and B, I think, too, who I think the offensive coordinator is, if the head coach is not a play caller. So I think from a monetary standpoint, Carson Wentz being the starting quarterback and succeeding is the best thing for the organization, because they've invested, you know, the $100+ million into the quarterback. But, you know, for me, whoever gives the team the best opportunity to succeed is who I want to see play at quarterback. I'm not looking for, you know, a Carson Wentz reclamation story. And I'm not looking for, on the flip side, a Jalen Hurts, you know, second year guy. Can he be the guy to take the team forward? Really, all I care about is W's, you know, and the win column. So
yeah.
Whichever one of these quarterbacks, I know that that's kind of a middle ground answer to give, but I for me, it really doesn't matter as long as the team has success.
So with Doug out, who would you hire as the next head coach?
So I think that there are probably two different ways that I would look at this. Either I would go with, because the thing is, too, you almost assume that they're going to have to hire an offensive coordinator as well. I don't think they're going to let the head coach go with the Doug Peterson, I'm the head coach and offensive coordinator and play caller. So I think that they probably will hire an OC as well. So I think you can kind of look at this one of two ways. You either hire an experienced head coach, and then maybe you go a little bit younger in the offensive coordinator department, or you flip those roles and you hire maybe a newer head coach with an experienced offensive coordinator. So for me right now, I think the best way to go about it would be to hire an experienced head coach and then have a younger offensive coordinator so the two can kind of balance each other out. So for me, I think that a really good pairing might be something like Jim Caldwell as the head coach, because he's had success in the past and he's taken the Lions to the playoffs, which is not an easy feat.
That's true.
You know, you get a guy like Jim Caldwell as the head coach, and then you go younger at the offensive coordinator position, and maybe you bring in a guy like Graham Harrell, who is somebody that they interviewed last year for the OC position before they decided they just weren't going to use one. He's been the offensive coordinator at USC for the last couple of years. I think a lot of people around the league think that he could be an innovative mind to bring into the NFL ranks. So if you could get a good balancing act between the two, where you have, you know, one that is experienced and one that maybe brings that college aspect to the game, where, you know, obviously the college game influences the NFL and vice versa. So if you can get a younger guy that has college experience, that might be a really nice balance between the two.
Do you feel confident in Howie picking at number six?
The $1 million question.
Yeah, from a fan perspective, no, I don't. But from a
football perspective,
if you're going to stay at six, I feel like this draft is deep enough where it's almost foolproof. Whomever you take.
True.
Almost.
So that's my best hope, is that there are enough, you know, super talented players left at six that whomever you take will have a successful NFL career.
Yeah, because Devontae Smith, as much as we all would love to have him,
oh my God,
he might not be there at six.
He was fantastic last night.
What do you have, 215 in the first half?
Fantastic.
12 catches, 3 touchdowns, and I think he played like 3 snaps in the second half.
Yeah. Man, I don't care if it's Carson or Jalen running around throwing that guy passes, but that would be a game changer for us.
Ideal.
You know, if an offensive line has continuity, because that's another issue that is really, really stands out on the page when you evaluate the Eagles this year, is that offensive line. You think Kelsey's coming back?
That right there is the offensive line's $1 million question.
Because I know.
I think we ask ourselves that every single season.
Yeah.
In my heart, I say yes. In my head, I lean towards no. You know, older veteran, doesn't really have a whole lot left to prove in the NFL, because I think that at some point, Jason Kelsey will get a nomination for the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he gets in, but I think that he has the credibility to be a Hall of Fame center. You know, multiple All Pros,
yeah.
Super Bowl champion. So I don't know if he has anything left to prove as an NFL center, and I don't know at his age if he wants to take that wear and tear on his body for a team that I think we all expect to probably be equally as bad next season.
Well, unfortunately, right now I agree with you. Maybe 5 or 6 wins if we're lucky, but remains to be seen. So let's shift to our Sixers.
Ah.
Our once 6-1, best in the league, 76ers.
God.
Now, we know that the issues were more related to COVID protocols with these last two horrendous games. How many wins do you think right now out of this 72? I have us at 40-32. Tech has us a few more than that, I think. Where do you have us?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the unfortunate part about this this week and this weekend in particular is, you know, and Doc Rivers, I think, said it during one of his media availabilities, either in post game or pregame, or maybe it was shoot around one of those recently, that, you know, this is unfortunately the way the NBA is kind of going to have to operate. And this unfortunate situation may hit other teams. You're seeing it now, you know, Boston and Miami was postponed tonight. I think Boston and the Bulls were postponed tonight. New Orleans and Dallas got postponed last night. So, I think the Sixers will come out of this eventually healthy and stronger and kind of get back to that team that we saw through the first 7 games of the season. So I would probably fall somewhere in between you guys. I think that 43, 44 is still a very realistic possibility. Obviously, it is fair to say that the teams that they've faced through the first seven games where they were 6-1, I know that Orlando was undefeated when they played them, and New York had a nice record when they went to go up to New York and play them.
Right.
But the teams that they've played so far, I would not call them super talented teams, but you can only play who you play, you know, when you play them. So schedule dictated that that's who they were going to play. And they took advantage of that because, you know, sometimes you look back to last year, you know, and you say that the Sixers probably lose that game in Orlando, or they lose, maybe they lose the Washington game to open the season because they just did not have that ability to play from behind and catch up when, you know, when they took, when they fell behind early. So I think that this team is significantly better than it was last year. So saying 44, 45 wins, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, that would probably put us around, what, the three or the four seed? That many wins, you think?
Maybe five? Yeah, I mean, I would think that that's probably pretty fair.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, we know the teams that are pretty much above us, the probably Boston, Miami. That could be it, though, depending on what Milwaukee ends up doing.
Yeah, I think that if you're going to take one of those teams and say that they have a regression year, I think that it might be Miami. I think that while they're a very talented team, I think that everything broke Miami's way in the playoffs last year, and they just had this cohesive unit that was unbreakable. You know, and obviously they get to the finals, and I think they just ran out of steam and ran into the team that we all assumed was just going to win the championship in the Lakers anyway. But I think that if there were any team of those three that you guys just mentioned that might take a step back, it might be Miami.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, though. Everything did break well for them. So real quick on the Phils, what do you think is going to happen with our pitching this year as far as – are they going to do anything to improve the relievers now, or is it pretty much what we see is what we're going to get?
I think that that's a great question. And I hate to say this, but I think if I had the answer to that question, I might be in the front office right now. But I think that you're going to see players come in, and I don't know if they are going to be, you know, big time names like everybody would like. I know that Liam Hendricks just got a deal last night with Chicago that was, I think, almost worth $40 million.
Yeah.
And that would have been a name that I think a lot of people would have really liked to kind of shore up the back end of the bullpen a little bit. I don't know if they're going to do anything other than re-sign JT Realmuto, which I'm still not confident in just yet.
Oh, man, that's huge. That is huge.
But, you know, I don't know if they're going to actually do anything of note in the bullpen or in the starting rotation. Ugh. So I think what you saw last year from the rotation is probably what you're going to get to start the year. So you'll have, you know, obviously Nola and Wheeler 1 and 2, or Wheeler and Nola, whoever they decide to go with for opening day. And then it's kind of, you take your pick. I think that Eflin showed some promise in 2020. That's probably, I would go him at three. And then, you know, is Spencer Howard going to take a step forward? We all hope so.
Yeah, he's got to.
Yeah, got so to. Guys, I hate to answer it this way, but I think what you see is what you're going to get on opening day for the most part.
We unfortunately agree once again with that.
Real quick, because I know you're a basketball guy, before we let you go, I mean, my assertion is that the Sixers are not a real, true contender. Would you agree with that? And if they're not a true contender, what kind of trade could they make to become a true contender?
I think that I would disagree to an extent. I don't put them on the same platform as the Lakers and Milwaukee. I know that they've had some struggles early, but I think that they'll figure things out. But I don't put them in that, you know, maybe tier one group where it's like, you know, finals favorites or whatever you'd like to call them. But I would put them in probably tier two, as in finals contenders. And I don't think that it's necessarily a trade that is going to make them better. I think for the first time with the Sixers, and I obviously having Doc Rivers is makes them significantly better just because the coaching is significantly improved over what they've had the last few years. But I think for the first time, the Sixers have the ability to look from within and get talent and productivity from within. And I think that you've seen it over the last two games, you know, specifically out of necessity. And that productivity from within is a 19-year-old kid named Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah. He looks good.
You know, when do you imagine he cracks the starting lineup?
You know, that's a good question. I would, quite honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't. And the reason I say that is, the reason I say that is not because it's a lack of productivity or a lack of faith in Tyrese Maxey. I think Doc Rivers is uber confident in Tyrese Maxey, and I think that he feels that if he can be a part of the leadership group of the second unit,
yep,
that makes the reserves significantly better.
True. That's a great point, and he does, because he looks like what we thought Markelle Fultz would look like.
Yeah.
That is exactly the name that I brought up as well. I think that this is, and you know, it's 10 games, you know, you can't take it as, you know, locked in,
right?
Because he's gonna, you know, once teams get tape on him, he's gonna struggle. Every young guy does. But that is exactly the name that I used, was this is exactly what we hoped Markelle Fultz was gonna be.
Tyler, we appreciate you joining us today, man. In closing, I'll tell you about something we have here at the Vet Alumni. It's the Vet Alumni Members Association. It's comprised of sports media members, one of your colleagues, Rob Motti, as well as sports veterans in the Philly media like Al Morganti. And we'd like to extend the invitation to you to be a part of the Vet Alumni Members Association.
That's awesome, guys. I really appreciate that. That's so cool.
We appreciate you too, man. We'll talk with you again soon, Tyler. Have a great day.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, guys.
What are we going to do?
Road trip.
I'm feeling like I'm ready to go.
Okay, let's go. Let's go.
Now it's time to take a road trip with Tech and Prim on the Vet Alumni Podcast.
Road trip, Vet Alumni style. Hey, we both went 4-2.
Not bad.
Last week
Not
on
bad.
Our on our playoff picks. I mean, I never saw the Rams beating the Seattle Seahawks.
Not
coming.
By 10.
I didn't
see
that.
We both lost on that one.
Yeah.
And then you had the Ravens over the Titans, which was a solid pick. And then I managed to hit on the Browns.
Yeah,
Nobody saw that coming.
I mean, look, I was rooting for the Browns because I am not a Steelers guy.
Me neither.
So I was rooting for the Browns, but I had ulterior motives to why I actually wanted Pittsburgh to win. I wanted Pittsburgh to win so that Kansas City
right.
has a tough game against Baltimore to get to the AFC Championship. I don't want to put down the Cleveland Browns. They're a B-minus team, and that's
right.
good.
Right, right. Well, that's maybe good. Right now playing like a B-plus team.
Yeah. Okay. You know what?
48 points.
Let's give them B-plus.
Okay.
But the Kansas City Chiefs
team,
and I feel like they almost just got an easy pass to the AFC Championship. And I don't want to demean Cleveland. I'm just keeping it real with where I think the Chiefs are at and where I think Cleveland is at.
Well, that's reasonable. And not only that, Tech, but Vegas agrees with you because...
And in Arrowhead.
In Arrowhead, Vegas agrees with you. The Browns are coming in as 10-point dogs.
Yes, they should.
After stomping the Steelers.
Right.
And that the Steelers defense is arguably probably better than the Kansas City defense.
I must be honest, the Steelers lost that game in the first quarter.
It was 35-7 by early in the second quarter.
It was crazy.
I was watching the game thinking to myself, this is one of those anomaly games.
Right.
You know, because some games in the playoffs are truly like that. You don't expect it to go down that way, and that's why it's playoff football.
And I thought the Steelers were going to win that game just, you know, looking at matchups and figuring Pittsburgh's going to win this game. And no, look out. Cleveland is here.
Well, all right, so here we go. So you got the Browns at the Chiefs, plus 10.
Browns at the Chiefs.
I'm taking the Browns in the upset straight up to win.
Oh, my God.
Taking the Browns in the upset.
I got to go Kansas City there. These are the Sunday games. Let's start with the Saturday games.
Okay, okay.
Let's go Rams going to Lambeau to take on Aaron Rodgers.
Packers are my NFC Super Bowl pick. So
me too.
I'm going to stick with the Packers.
I will do that as well.
So both on the Packers, though.
The night game is Baltimore going to Buffalo, facing the red-hot Josh Allen.
Buffalo is also my Super Bowl pick for the AFC, so I'm going to stick with Buffalo.
They're not my Super Bowl pick, but I am going to go with Buffalo in this game. I will say that Nothing would surprise me when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens. Even though they tend to be an up-and-down team, I just can't bet against them. I can't they're not going to win this game. But I will pick Buffalo in this particular game.
Okay, so we're both on the Packers, both on the Bills.
So then we move on to Sunday. You have the Cleveland Browns.
I have the Browns going into Arrowhead
mm-hmm.
and beating a Chiefs team on a last-minute field goal because the Chiefs, quite frankly, the last month of the season have not been dominant.
Yeah, I don't know, with Andy and Pat Mahomes, a switch just getting
it's a long shot pick only because we have to differ on a couple of these. Number one, I know. And I just hit on the Browns.
I hear you.
I ride the wave.
You know how deafening, how loud it's going to be.
Not that loud with COVID because you're only going to have
there's no fans there, right?
Maybe 7,000, 8,000.
I was about to say, they got fans there.
Yeah, some states do.
They were a stadium that had fans.
They did. Florida stadiums had fans. Texas stadiums had fans.
It's not going to be as loud as you said because of COVID. You're right about
that. Baker's going to be able to hear himself. Jarvis Landry and his amazing hands going to be out
there. In any normal year, the fan noise in that building.
Huge.
Okay, so then you go to the late game. You got the matchup, I feel
it's
like
awesome.
Everybody has wanted for years in a Super Bowl. Brady and Brees.
We should have gotten a few years ago when the Saints got ripped off. When the Saints got ripped off.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I'm taking Brady to go in there and win.
I am going with Drew Brees on this one.
Okay,
No team has really figured out the way they're running their offense. Kamara's looking good right now. And you know, Michael Thomas is a beast.
He is.
I'm going to stick with the Saints on this one.
I think that the Bucs defense will be the difference. Because Drew Brees last week against the Bears defense that is very comparable to the Bucs defense, active linebackers, active front, they struggle to put 21 points up in their own building.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking Brady's got that offense humming right now. Godwin and Evans are hard to cover. I don't know how healthy that Saints secondary is right now, but they've been banged up, that Saints secondary.
Yeah,
it's a tough one.
I know Malcolm Jenkins
is over
there.
You sound like you're doubting your pick.
Well, because when it comes, the same thing applies what I was saying a few minutes ago to Tom Brady. It's hard to bet against Brady. When I know Brady's involved, it's like it takes everything in me to like pick against him.
To pick against him, of course.
So I'm just going against maybe better judgment, and I'm going with New Orleans because I just see New Orleans, Green Bay, and that NFC Championship. It just makes sense with what's been going on this season.
It does. Okay, so we differ on two picks. So at the end of next week, we're going to have a clear-cut front runner in the Tech and Prem playoff picks runoff.
There it is. All right, so once again, Green Bay over the Rams.
Consensus.
That's a consensus. Buffalo over the Ravens.
Consensus.
You're taking Cleveland over the Chiefs.
And you are not.
I'm taking Kansas City over Cleveland. And you're taking Tampa Bay over New Orleans.
Brady goes in to the dome.
I'm taking the Saints. I'm taking the Saints in New Orleans. All right, there it is. That's it for the road trip. Let's head on back. And, there it is.
Gears up.
Oh, the Vet Line. Oh, my God. We got Matt Mullen coming up from the Philly Voice. On the Vet Line. Stay tuned.
Here we go.
Pro Line Music.
Located at 490 Lincoln Highway in Fairless Hills, PA.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician. Carrying all major brands. You find a better price, we'll beat it. Offering lessons in person or virtual. On-site repair service center. Rentals. Recording studio.
Pro Line Music. Call 215-736-8055.
One more time.
215-736-8055.
Yes, sir.
Pro Line Music.
Everything for the musician.
And now, it's the Vet Line.
Answer the damn phone.
Today, we're joined on the Vet Line by Matt Mullen, sports writer for the Philly Voice. Matt, thanks for chatting with us today.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. We'll dive right into this mess of a Birds situation. Now, we've both read your recent pieces, and Tech and I both agree with a lot of your major points. But for our listeners, break down your view of what is happening and what is maybe going to happen.
Sure. I mean, well, there are a lot of ways to attack this, right? I think, you know, what ultimately happened was, at least if you're going to believe what Jeff Lurie said, which, you know, you can or you don't have to, but he seems like he's more focused on now. They had their short window of trying to win a championship, and now this is kind of his way of pseudo half blowing it up and trying to start over by getting rid of the head coach and I guess the defensive coordinator, who they didn't get rid of, but he left all the same. I'm not happy that they're taking a half measure. I don't know if either of you guys watched Breaking Bad, but one of the best scenes in the whole show is Mike telling Walt,
"No more half measures, Walter."
No more half measures, and this certainly felt like a half measure because, you know, you can blame Doug all you want, but he can only do so much with the players he has, right?
Exactly.
And the players he has, yeah, there have been injuries and stuff like that, but they haven't been great. You know, one, I'm sure everyone has seen the stat right now, one Pro Bowl player drafted in the last, you know, 5 or so years, it's not good. And I think I'm okay with Doug going.
We feel the same, yeah.
If Howie went too.
That's a good point. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah, I think you can't separate one from the other in terms of the overall failure of the team. And honestly, I think if one deserved to go more, it was probably Howie.
Yeah, we agree with you. We've talked at length about the misses on the picks. We obviously know about the wide receivers is probably the most glaring evidence of that. But even guys like Dalvin Cook that they could have drafted, you know, that are game breakers. Mm-hmm. So as far as the GM situation goes, what do you think, or who do you think would be a better fit? There's a couple names that even been floated. If in fact Howie was out the door, hypothetically, who do you think would be a good fit to come in and fix the personnel department?
Well, I don't even know that necessarily Howie needs to go as much as I think someone else needs to be making the draft personnel decisions. Howie's respected around the league in terms of making deals and stuff like that. You know, he has no problem signing guys when they need to sign them. It's his talent evaluation, right? That's always been the problem. And if you look, I don't think it was a coincidence that they won the Super Bowl shortly after Joe Douglas arrived and have gone backwards since he's left. Sure, he was overseeing some of those drafts where guys weren't hit, but he also helped build that Super Bowl team. So I think maybe if you're not going to get rid of Howie, I think you need to bring in someone who is an expert evaluator of talent, someone who can make sure that they don't miss these picks and make sure really protect Howie from himself. Because I feel like a lot of these mistakes that he makes are him overthinking it or trying to be the smartest guy in the room. A guy right in front of you, just take this guy. Don't make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Right. And if we as fans and writers can look at it and figure it out, then my question always was, why can't the guys that are making the real money figure it out?
Right.
You know?
Right. Like, everyone seemed to think last year, Justin Jefferson is that guy. He's the guy you take. And Howie felt differently. I don't know why they decided to go that way.
Nepotism, but, you know, maybe? A little bit of nepotism?
Maybe, but it just seems like it's becoming, you know, a theme where there's a guy that everyone in the public thinks is the best fit for them, the best option available, and how he zags when everyone else is zigging. I don't really understand where that comes from.
Matt, a report came out minutes after Doug's dismissal that Carson would likely want to stay. But after Jeffrey's comments about getting younger in a quote-unquote transition period, would Carson even want to be here for that?
I don't know so much that it's whether Carson would want to be here, as much as it would be, do they think Carson is the guy to emerge on the other end of that rebuild as the quarterback of the future? Ruben Frank from NBC Sports wrote an interesting thing earlier that I hadn't really considered when watching Jeffrey Lurie's presser live, that he referred to both Hurts and Wentz as assets and talent, not so much as players.
Right.
And he did say something about down the line when we do decide to go with one over the other, So, I mean, it could be that they decide to go with Hurts instead of Wentz because they think he's younger and ultimately could be cheaper.
Right.
My problem with that, though, is the way they have this contract with Wentz. If you look at kind of what the blueprint is for winning in the NFL, there's really two ways to go. You either have a quarterback who is just incredible and elevates everyone else on the team, or you have a younger quarterback who is cheaper and maybe not as good, but you're able to put incredible talent around him. Think of Russell Wilson in 2013 or whatever it was. So if you can have that quarterback still on a rookie contract, you can really kind of game the rest of the salary cap and, you know, add just dynamic playmakers, receivers, running backs, a strong defense, all that stuff. That's the way I would love to see the Eagles go with Jalen Hurts, because I'm not sure that he's the guy who can lift up a whole team around him. But I think with a good team around him, maybe he can be that one day. Right now, he's not. But with a great team around him, maybe he could be good enough.
Yeah, right.
Problem is, you trade Carson Wentz now, you still have to pay that contract for the next year or two.
Ah, it's terrible.
You lose the ability to have, you essentially have that younger guy, but the salary cap hit for the quarterback position, if you include Wentz, even if he's on another team, you might as well have a guy who you're paying $25 million, $30 million to. So they're really in a bad spot if Lurie wants to rebuild.
Speaking of the salary cap, it can get confusing, especially with conflicting reports and conjecture being put out there about that situation. For the record, where is this team at in terms of the cap right now?
That would be a better question for my colleague, Jimmy Kemsky, who I deflect all of my salary stuff to him. But from what I can tell, best I can tell, is that they're going to need to shave about $70 million off of the cap. And that's before the new league year starts. They have to get under that.
Wow.
So, I mean, my other colleague, Evan Macy, wrote something last week that even if the Eagles got rid of basically their entire Super Bowl core, which includes a lot of those aging veterans on expensive contracts, you know, Zach Ertz, Fletcher Cox, guys like that, they still wouldn't get rid of enough money to get under the cap.
Yeah, I mean,
so they're in a quandary. I don't really know how they do it.
Neither do I.
It's going to be a lot of restructuring, a lot of same thing they've been doing, though, kicking the can down the road, and eventually that bill is going to come up, and they're going to have to pay it.
Speaking of Jimmy Kemsky, we will be having him on in a couple weeks, so
awesome.
We'll be sure to dive into the salary cap depths. Because
well, you know what's funny? Even he, I'll ask him something, and he'll be like, you know what? I don't know that. He'll ask Jason from Over the Cap.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. with a site like Over the Cap, I think you're qualified. Now, here's a situation for you, Matt. Devontae Smith is sitting there at number 6, and here comes Howie to make his pick or send whoever they send up to make their pick, and they don't take Devontae Smith. How likely is it that the link burns down?
It's going to be terrible. People are going to lose their minds, and it's going to get even worse the next year when we're watching whoever the Eagles pick, that guy is struggling or more likely injured.
Right.
And Devonta Smith is out there just, you know,
killing
breaking
it.
Records. And yeah, like get the right guy. Just hit on one, and it kind of, like, the dominoes start to fall. You can start building off of one. If you don't hit on one, like, think about the best draft pick the Eagles have had in the last couple of years. One of the top couple has probably been Jordan Mailata.
True, just because of the value aspect.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The value is big. I mean, some of these linebackers, too. I mean, there's some value with a guy like Alex Singleton, some value
true.
With a guy like
he's a Canadian football guy.
Still value.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully we end up with Devontae Smith. He's that transcendent type of receiver. You got 200 yards in the first half of the national title game. That is just remarkable.
He's in a different league than he looks like a college player, a professional player out there playing against, you know, high school kids.
Yeah. It's crazy. And Ohio State, that defense is nothing to scoff at.
No.
Those players.
Not at all.
Yeah, so I'm with you. And I think regardless who the quarterback is, whether it's Carson or Jalen, you know, look at guys like Josh Allen take that big leap this year. I mean, you got Stephon Diggs leading the league in receiving yards.
Yeah.
Yep.
We've been lacking that. Even the Super Bowl year, we were lacking that. Now, your personal opinion. Would you like to see Carson rebooted with a new coach and a new scheme, or would you rather prefer probably the what you alluded to with move on with Jalen on the rookie deal, if you had to pick?
I see. I'm so worried about trading Carson because he has the physical skills. I mean, we've seen it. We saw it in 2017, 2018, even 2019. And this year, one bad year, I feel like they might regret giving up on him. That being said, unless they, you know, if they bring in someone like Brian Dabble from the Bills, who worked with Josh Allen this year, if they bring in someone like that who is going to, you know, who's a quarterback whisperer, so to speak,
right?
I think, you know, you can try to run it back. I didn't think there was any way they could run it back with Doug and Carson again, but my secret, like the guy I really want just for the takes is Lincoln Riley.
Really?
And have Carson here. Like if both of those quarterbacks are, could you imagine the reaction that people would have if the Eagles went out and got Jalen Hurts as college coach?
I mean, you're right. I personally, the way I lean on that is I don't want like a Steve Spurrier situation.
No.
You don't think any potential for that?
Well, I think, you know, there's always a worry bringing a guy from college to the pros. And I mean, we suffered that firsthand in Philadelphia, seeing what happened with Chip Kelly. And, you know, I'll admit I was high on Chip Kelly when they first hired him.
So is Tech. I thought.
Yeah, I was a big Chip guy.
Yeah, and it was less that I was a Chip guy and more that I was like, hey, the Eagles are actually thinking outside the box.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
They're doing something different. Maybe this could be something. You know, I was glad it wasn't. I hate when there are retreads hired and it's just, oh, this is a known name and he's safe, so let's hire him. I always want to see an organization forward thinking. And, you know, it was the wrong choice, but hiring Chip certainly was forward thinking at the time. So I wouldn't mind seeing a college coach like that, but it does seem like the more successful track recently in the NFL has been these up and coming position coaches and coordinators. So I wouldn't mind seeing them go that way either.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley, I mean, I just, why would he want to come here? I mean, he's a king in Oklahoma. I mean, everyone in the NFL eventually gets fired. I mean, he could be there for another decade at Oklahoma, couldn't he?
Right, but there's always that itch of wanting to do it at the highest level, I think. Different sport, but just look at a guy like Jay Wright. Why would you ever want to go to the NBA?
Right.
Yet every time when there's an opening, his name comes up because he can't, you know, he might want to take, like, he doesn't really have any challenges left in college basketball. He's proven he can do it all. So maybe the next thing for him would be to try it in the pros.
I mean, it stands to reason.
Taking that money and the job security and having more control over the players like they, you know, college coaches seem to have, that seems like a pretty good life.
As far as shaking it up and going a different direction with their hiring of a new head coach, what do you think about going like a defensive guy, like a Salah, who they just got permission to interview, or like Todd Bowles, these like defensive coordinator guys? What do you think about that?
Lurie did say that he doesn't care one way or the other, whether it's an offensive guy or a defensive guy, because the way he looks at it, and I really thought this was funny, was that he thinks, you know, defensive guys can also be successful coaching up an offense or creating an offense, because I think the unsaid thing there was they go up against offenses every day, so they know what works and what doesn't, which kind of reminded me of the whole Juan Castillo thing. But anyway, I think it's not a bad idea, but he hasn't hired anyone on the defensive side since Ray Rhodes.
We were talking about that today. Yeah.
Yep.
He's clearly an offense. He's a guy who believes that offense wins. So I don't think he's going to go that way. I wouldn't hate it. You know, having a defensive guy as the head coach and hiring a really good offensive coordinator. You know, it didn't work with Doug having the head coach also be the offensive coordinator.
Big failure. Big failure.
Epic failure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think that separating that power, there's kind of a checks and balances there. So, you know, I would not be against that. I just don't think that's what he's going to do. I think he's going to wind up being an offensive guy.
Do you agree with something Jeffrey Lurie said, that he thinks there's 5 or 6 GMs in this organization right now? What do you make of that comment?
I think maybe...
Are there 5 or 6 GMs that guys would pluck from this organization? No. I mean, I think of how he got fired tomorrow. I don't think he'd get a job.
He would get a job, maybe not right away, but he would probably get one somewhere, if not as a GM, as a pretty high front office job. But I think there have been 5 or 6 GMs in the front office. I mean, Joe Douglas was just here. He got hired away. Berry in Cleveland, he was in the Eagles front office, got hired away.
Yeah, but he was only here for like 10 minutes, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, he was here for a year, I believe. But, I think there are talented guys in that front office, and clearly Howie isn't the only one making decisions down there, but to say there are 5 GMs, I mean, maybe some of them are, 24 years old and they're going to be GMs in 15, 20, 30 years.
Who are these GMs?
But how are we ever going to know that? The Eagles do have a good track record of producing those kind of guys, same way they have producing head coaches. They've been more of a coach and GM factory than a quarterback factory, that's for sure.
Yeah, we were talking about that as well, the fact that Lurie really has only hired 4 coaches, I believe, right, from Rhodes.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. Maybe only the Steelers and the Patriots have a better or a lower number in 25 years.
And in his front office consistency, I mean, it's really been Joe Banner and Howie.
Yeah, I love Joe Banner, man. I love his takes on Twitter, too. He's always very decisive and direct. No fodder with Joe Banner.
No, and he's pretty good at cutting through BS and seeing, there's a report out there and someone's saying one thing. He'd be like, well, this doesn't make sense because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, So, Matt, we really appreciate the time once again, man.
Absolutely.
In closing, we have something here we call the Vet Alumni Members Association. It's comprised of a growing number of sports media professionals like yourself in Philly, and we'd like to extend the invitation to you to be a part of the association.
Absolutely. I'm honored, fellas. Thank you.
We're honored to have you, man. And thanks again.
I am a Vet alum. I am a Vet alum myself. My family has had Eagles season tickets since before I was born. So I grew up down at the Vet. So
that's awesome.
Of course,
man.
I will be in the Vet Alumni Club.
That's awesome. So then I have to ask you then, and we'll let you go. Mm-hmm. Favorite Vet memory that you attended? Good
Let's
one, right?
See.
Tough one.
It was probably it's a weird one, but it was probably the Brian Dawkins game. The one where he had the fumble return for a touchdown, the receiving touchdown, and it was, with the fake punt and everything.
Texans. Was that against the Texans?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. I remember that game. Nice.
Yeah. That was awesome. I mean, there were a lot of the good Eagles memory, all the playoffs and stuff, that all happened at the Link.
It would probably
be that one.
Sounds good, man. That's definitely high on the list. I think me personally, I was lucky to attend the 93 NLCS clincher.
Ten
years old.
I think I was there too.
Section 510, still got my ticket, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Definitely, Matt. So yeah, that's we really awesome. Appreciate you once again, and we'll be talking with you hopefully again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Whenever you guys need, just let me know.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
These games are a blowout, a human lock. You can bet your children's unborn children on these games.
Oh, boy. Prem's Picks.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, Tech.
How'd we
last
do?
Last week,
we do?
I went 2 for 3 last week.
And all right.
We know that I hit on the Colts +7, losing by 3 points.
Right.
And I got the Saints straight up. We know they beat the Bears. And we also just talked about how we both missed on the Rams-Seahawks game.
Yep.
So, 2 for 3 last week. And Tech, here are the divisional round locks.
Locks.
The Browns are getting no respect. They handled the Steelers relatively easily at Heinz Field, shedding decades of despair and loss, jumping out to a 35-7 lead and then subsequent beatdown of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They come in, like we talked about already, +10 in KC. Now, KC's a juggernaut. We know that. They definitely looked less than dominant in December. Browns +10 is a gimme bet to me because I see this as a good old-fashioned AFC shootout. Both teams in the 30s. I already picked the Browns to win, so the +10 is a gimme lock.
Lock.
Tech, give me the Packers -7 to handle the Rams.
Yep.
The LA Magic was a one-week deal. I think despite Ramsey covering Adams, which is a significant aspect to look at, Aaron Rodgers wins this game by 10 points at home.
Definitely.
Jones is going to have a big night. Aaron Jones will have a big night because the Rams are really going to hone in on the pass defense like they do.
Yep.
Packers -7. Lock.
Lock.
My last pick of the divisional round weekend is my Super Bowl champion pick, Bills -2 at home against the Ravens. I thought you would disagree, but it seems like from the previous segment, you do agree, even though the Ravens were your dark horse.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bills are winning the chip this year.
I don't know if they're winning the chip.
They win this game by a field goal. So they cover the 2 points. Bills -2. Lock.
Lock.
So to recap, we got the Browns +10 in KC.
Lock.
The Packers -7 at Lambeau.
Lock.
And the Bills -2 at home in Buffalo.
Lock.
This has been Prem's Picks.
See you next week. And we're also going to talk about the Flyers next week too, Prem.
Fly guys.
See you next week.
Vet Alumni.